There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday, and lots to do on today's show. Coming up in just a few, Jennifer Boozer from Canabama is going to join us. Also, Ray Melick, 1819news.com on the way. Dale Leach from Lanyap, and a whole lot more on today's show. But we'll start with the weather, and we'll start with our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams. Dr. Bill, since I walked in the studio, I watched the temperature gauge here. It was at 51. I had to walk in here about 30 minutes ago. At 51, it's now down to 49. So it is falling.
It is falling, and all you have to do is to look upstate or up into central Mississippi, and you get an idea that we've got colder air headed our way, because right now at Jackson, Mississippi, it's only 35 degrees.
Ooh.
As opposed to the a reading of about 49 right now here in the city. And it's still around 60 over in Pensacola. So the front is moving through the cold front, and will continue to move out over the Gulf tonight. The problem right now, Sean, is that that front will be out over the Gulf, but moisture will be coming in over the top of the cold air. And so as temperatures continue to drop through tonight and getting down into the low 30s, then we could see some of the rain that will form come down as rain and then hit the surface, which is at freezing. And that produces what we call freezing rain, or coating of ice. And that is possible late tonight, more likely around daybreak. And it'll occur over southern portions of Alabama, southwest Alabama, and southeast Mississippi. It's not a sure thing, but there is a decent chance that we could see some freezing rain. It is, of course, a very dangerous type of weather event, because you don't see the ice. But if you're driving, then you will encounter it, and it's a very unpleasant feeling.
Yeah.
The likelihood, the greatest chance for that will be in areas where, well, where you don't have a high volume of traffic, and therefore the ice can form. And also, it's most likely over to occur on bridges and overpasses, because the cold air can get underneath the roadway, and so it not only hits the roadway from below, but also from above. And that increases the likelihood that the rain will freeze into a coating of ice. So that could occur then around daybreak tomorrow, may last for an hour or so after daybreak, and then temperatures will warm up a bit, and it would not be a problem. But it's still going to be cold tomorrow. I expect temperatures in the afternoon only to be in the mid-40s, very possible. It could be even in the lower 40s, and the cold weather will continue on into the weekend.
So, okay, definitely the coldest temperatures of the winter so far, right? We're going to hit those.
Yeah, it looks like Saturday night. Now, we'll be faced with some light rain at times tomorrow. And then tomorrow night, we'll get down to 30, so just slightly below freezing. And then on Saturday, it's going to seem like a heat wave. It'll be mostly sunny, around 50 degrees. But don't let your guard down here, because Saturday night, with a light wind, clear skies, the ground will lose heat very rapidly, and that's where the temperature could get down into the mid-20s, around 25 degrees for Saturday night. And then Sunday, just a little bit warmer, sunny skies and 52, but still a light freeze for Sunday night. And then we'll finally, Monday and Tuesday, we'll get back up to normal and get on up to around 60 or above above 60 on Tuesday. So we'll have several nights here then which we'll have temperatures at freezing or below freezing.
Now, this this potential for freezing rain, we're talking about for overnight and more maybe by daybreak tomorrow. You mentioned roads and you talked about that. I'm thinking about in the past freezing rain events and maybe stories from elsewhere where it accumulates and it makes branches come off trees and things come down in power line. Are we not looking at that kind of accumulation? Or
no, I don't think that will occur. What we normally see is that type of event with very large amounts of ice is upstate in the northern portions of Alabama and Mississippi, where some of those freezing rain events up there were really sort of catastrophic. And it only takes just a little bit of a coating to make things rather tough for driving. Now, it could happen here in the city, but again, any area where we do not have a lot of traffic, the roads will have a chance to really cool down. And your best chance of encountering that will be on bridges. So that's certainly where you want to be very careful when you cross any kind of an overpass.
Absolutely. And we'll be tuned in to you tomorrow when you're talking to Dan and Dalton about that as well. We appreciate the update, Dr. Bill. Thank you.
Okay, Sean.
There he is, our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams. Severe weather out there in the form of whatever. In this case, it could be freezing rain. Dr. Bill always joins us for more updates. All right, so, and if anything changes, we'll pass that information along to you. We're going to bring on to the show here a voice you hear Monday nights here at FM Talk 106.5 on her own show, Sweet Home Canabama. Jennifer Boozer from Canabama joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Yes, thanks for having me.
A lot to talk about here. Of course, folks know your show, and you're talking about, you know, CBD and marijuana laws in the state. And you and I have talked about this through the process in the legislature last year with this medical marijuana law. That goes through, but then the how it works part, you know, that's where I put on my nerd hat, Jennifer, and I'm interested in this, and I know this is what you do every day. So let's talk about this. So with the passage of medical marijuana legislation, it then established this, Alabama Medical Cannabis Commission, is that right?
Right. There's a committee, there's doctors, there's lawyers, researchers on this committee, and they're advising the governor on how to move forward with the bill.
Now, and so like the, okay, so we're going to have medical marijuana. The process is, and I know nothing is in stone yet, but somebody would get the prescription and then they would go to a dispensary, right? To get that prescription filled for the medical marijuana. Is that how it's kind of, you think
well,
it's going to work?
Actually, there's not actually a prescription. They're not allowed to prescribe it.
Oh, that's right.
Which is very odd. But they can recommend it. And what you'll do is, if you have one of these conditions, you'll go to a certified doctor who will then take you through the process of looking at your medical history. Are you a candidate for medical marijuana? And there's going to be, and they haven't really revealed a whole lot about what the standards are going to be, what type of screening that, you know, whatever past medical history they're going to look at. I just know they're going to look at pre-existing conditions, things like that. You can't just walk in and say, I have anxiety, can I have a medical card? But you'll basically be issued a medical card. You'll pay a fee once a year. And then your doctor can recommend it and give you the medical card. And then you can then take the medical card to a dispensary. And there will be a limitation on the amount you can buy. And, of course, you'll only be able to buy certain types of products. They're limiting the methods of consumption to just a few. And a lot of people are unhappy about that part. But, you know, you'll be able to go in and get your medicine and you'll administer it yourself at home like a prescription. But there's not an actual prescription and it won't be covered by medical insurance.
But the I guess the way we get the physician, these qualified physicians, their decision making would be whether to give you the medical card. I guess that's I know they're not doing
if
a prescription.
Qualify,
but, okay.
Right. If you qualify based on your medical history, any kind of test they can run. You know, because you can't really run a whole lot of tests to find if someone has extreme anxiety, but there are psychological questions and things, processes that they use. You'll have to probably go through all that, bring your medical history. Again, they haven't given us a whole lot of information. I'm just using common sense and what I know about other legal states. But the doctors, unfortunately, and in my opinion, this is one of the worst details of the bill, is the doctors that will be certified will only be required to have 4 hours of training.
4 hours?
Cannabis. 4 hours.
They're going to say, well, their medical degree, they stay a long time, but to know how to, I mean, if you had any kind of news.
Well, cannabis is its own ball of wax. I mean, I've been studying it for 5 years, and I still know that I don't know a whole lot of much, you know, and I know a lot more than most people I know.
Sure you do. I know. Yeah,
we're still discovering things, you know. No one will ever be, but 4 hours is, to me, a little bit silly.
That's interesting. I mean, because I want to get into the fact of dispensaries, and you've been in this business. You're an innovator in this business here in our area and in the state. And you're saying, hey, they need some more. You want additional requirements for the physicians. You want some more training.
And I would kill to see what that 4 hours worth of education actually is. I mean, you can learn some super basic things over 4 hours. But before I opened my business, I studied it 10, 12 hours a day some days for 9 months. And I have learned the majority of what I know since then. So I don't understand. There's so many different things. And if you listen to my show, you know that. There's constantly new information. There's new cannabinoid discoveries. There's all the different elements of the plant. We're not just dealing with one thing, which is THC. You know, the plant is complex and has hundreds and hundreds of compounds in it. There are methods of consumption, product types, and then matching those with the different illnesses. That's worth more than 4 hours in itself.
Yeah, I've heard you discuss that, of the method of consumption being linked to a specific remedy. In Alabama,
yes.
The law legalized, I know, because I made enough jokes about it, suppositories was one of them, but what... people aren't smoking
and
it, right?
You know what? And we can laugh about suppositories because it is funny, but it's an incredibly effective method of consumption, because if you think about it, the area of the body that you use a suppository in is filled with nerves and blood vessels,
right.
And there's no digestive process to dilute the potency. It goes directly to the bloodstream. The only thing more bioavailable and immediately usable is to smoke or inhale a vapor.
Okay. And I think
so
the reason...
It is one of the most bioavailable ways to use it. I'm glad they included suppositories.
No,
but it is funny.
Fair enough. Yeah, I guess I was using it during the debate when they said, oh, well, you know, people are going to be abusing this. I said, I don't think the college kids are all going to go keister. Something. But if the way you understand it now, that mm-hmm. somebody would get that medical card and then go to a dispensary, they'd be available. But they wouldn't, I guess people are wondering if they're going to be able to, or people getting leaf and smoking it. That's not part of
no.
this, is it?
No. No. There's no smokable or vapable, no inhalation whatsoever, no edible.
Okay.
Nothing baked into anything. We get the oil, which is a tincture. Most people always say, what's a tincture? It's the oil you put under your tongue. It's sublingual. They're doing capsules. They're doing topicals. They're doing a singular flavor of a gelatinous cube, not sugar-coated, for a lozenge.
Okay.
And the suppositories, and I think that's it.
Now let's talk about the next part of this. Now, they would go to a dispensary, the way I understand this, right to go get it. And a limitation on this of, 32 for... Is it five? Five licenses?
I keep hearing conflicting things.
Yeah.
I know what you're about to say. Five, basically, to start out, they are issuing 4 licenses. I fact checked with my experts. 4 licenses. Each licensee will be able to establish 3 dispensaries in different counties. You can have 1 per county.
So it's not going to be... So
12 for the entire state of Alabama initially. After 1 year, if they deem... and a greater need, then each one will be able to have up to 5.
But,
and unless they change it in this next legislative session, which I am lobbying, by the way, for the first time.
There you go.
Unless they change it, that is what is written in the bill right now.
But
12 dispensaries for the entire state of Alabama, which is wow.
Yeah, and the other, I mean, there's that part of it, and there's also, you know, the free market guy that I am, I worry about this on all things. So only four people will control those, only four entities will control those 12. It won't even be 12 different, you know, small businesses trying to do this.
No, it will not be 12 different small businesses. It will be four, and trust me when I say, no one was interested in cannabis in Alabama until this medical bill was passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd even been told by someone that I have as a contact and a vendor in the hemp industry that if I were able to do it, like, because of course, Cannabama would love to keep setting a high standard and have a dispensary. However competitive that's going to be, I'm a little bit scared of, but, you know, I don't know anybody and I don't have tons of money, but as far as the ability to do it well, I think Cannabama stands a good chance. But I was told if you were to get a dispensary license, I have 10 people on speed dial that would give you a bag of cash for it. Because you have to be an Alabama resident for the last 10 years.
Do you,
as far as I know, I was just told that this morning. You will have to have been an Alabama resident for X number of years for a portion of the licenses.
Are you having to, if just joining us, talking to Jennifer Booser from Cannabama and Sweet Home Cannabama radio show, do you have to apply? Is it push or pull? In other words, are you having to contact this commission and saying, hey, I would like to be a dispensary. Where's my, what form do I fill out? Or do they contact you?
Well,
how is it working?
They'll be making a public announcement about that. From what I understand, unless it's changed, because it's constantly changing, September of this year was what they had slated for the ability to apply for growers licenses and things like that. As far as I know, we will have to wait until then, and they haven't really said much about here's what you got to do. And I asked two different people who couldn't give me a figure on what the license fee is going to be. I don't think we know yet. It could be anything from $1,000 to $50,000 if you look around at legal states. And there's lots of different. Some states you have to have money sitting in the bank that's just ready to go. Like you have to have a minimum of $1.5 million sitting in the bank. You have to be this. You have to be that. Here's the fee. And it's a long process. I know California is one of the hardest states to get licensed in.
So... But, I mean, we still don't know this, but it seems like there should be a frequently asked question sheet on this. That's so everybody could see this. Yeah. So everybody could see this, right?
Yes. I think they're reserving that information because they themselves haven't really decided. I wish they had included people that are within the industry, whether it's people like me who are boots on the ground with people every day, or some of my advocate friends who have been in cannabis advocacy longer than I've been in the business. You know, people who are dealing with the actual citizens and patients, you know, people who actually have a need for this stuff, and then people who are working with the patients, because we have a lot of insight into what's realistic and what's not.
All right.
I think they're reserving that information because they're, you know, there's a certain amount of things that I think that they can alter. And then going into the legislative session, who knows?
Okay. Well, you will know before most folks, so I will call you back and get you on for an update on that, if that's good. And, of course, people can check.
100%. And on Monday nights,
yes.
As soon as I find, I'll be going to Montgomery every Wednesday for the next couple of months as a lobbyist for cannabis. And so every Monday on the show, we'll have updates on anything I've learned or come across or seen. Hopefully we're going to get a couple of gubernatorial candidates on the show also who are taking a stance on marijuana in a positive way. As much information as I can funnel to you, and I'll get the experts on to make sure that you at the station and our listeners are fully aware of everything as it happens.
Very good. 7 o'clock Monday night, Sweet Home Cannabama. Jennifer Booser, thank you. Appreciate your time. Thanks for the update.
Thank you so much.
All right. Coming right back for Midday Mobile. Yeah, so that's a... See how it is? They pass a law, and then there's carve-outs and blockage and all those kind of things. Yeah. All right. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, short on time here for the news break. And coming back, Ray Millick, 1819 News, will join us. So a bunch of texts here. We're trying to get to some of these. Also, just want to point out as well, is only 12 cultivator licenses. Because the way the legislation was, that the marijuana would be grown in the state for Alabamians with the medical card and at Alabama-owned dispensaries. But you heard Jennifer Boozer, you were talking about some real-world stuff there that people are already saying, hey, if you get a license, can we buy it from you or subsidize? See, this is what happens. I would like, more free market competition. I would like, and that there will be 12. So there'll be, at first, there's going to be, I think she said, four entities will be licensed to have dispensaries, and they can each have three. So that, in my rudimentary math, is 12. So you could have 12 dispensaries in the state, which some people would, I don't know. I don't know what the right number is. I would let the market decide. But you have 12 dispensaries in the state, but only four entities owning this. This is the stuff that drives me berserk on this. It really does. So, we talked about this while that legislation was going through, and I kind of thought we had some idea how this thing would work, and it seems like it's fluid, right? That's the term, it's fluid. All right, coming right back. Or a suppository.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And as Dr. Bill said, if we get the issue with icing, it will be overnight tonight, but maybe more closely associated with daybreak tomorrow. So be aware, bridges, overpasses, all that kind of stuff. No kind of accumulations that would cause like trees down and power lines, but just slick streets if it does happen. So keep your eyes on that. We'll get you updates from Dr. Bill as any information changes on it. All right, bring onto the air, like he joins me most Thursdays, Ray Millick, editor-in-chief of 1819news.com. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. And everything good up your way, up the state?
Yeah. I mean, our it sounds like the worst weather is going to be below us, which is kind of unusual. But it's cold, but we're not really expecting anything that I'm aware of anyway, like hard freezes or even that. This is Alabama. We get winter, and then it'll be 70 degrees in about 4 days. So just hang on.
That's correct. And I wonder if this colder weather will hasten on a quick completion to the special session going on in Montgomery. Maybe they're warming themselves up with all the ARPA money. I don't know.
Yeah. And then they're having that whole little bout of COVID infections that I know they've sent five or six guys have gone home. So there was even talk about whether they could finish the special session, but that's not going to stop them from spending the people's money.
Yeah, and I get it. I get using the capital investment opportunity because you might not like the whole system, but right now this is the way the game's played, and the feds are sending the money in. So I get using it for capital investment, but I guess it's the placement of the special session is interesting to me. And I know on 1819news.com, Justin Bogey has written, a rush to spend ARPA funds is feeding government rather than taking less from the people. Mine is almost a question of when it seems like this is the easiest lift of it, spending the money. Why don't we get the other things done in regular session? They're supposed to do budgets and all those things, and then deal with capital investments through ARPA money at the end, right? Eat your vegetables, then you get dessert.
Well, and there's a lot of conspiracy theories, and I know you heard them as well, and I'm not saying that they're not true, that some of this is, let's get this stuff done before January 28th and then find out who's got opponents that they've got to run against, and they can go out and tout all the money they're spending to make people's lives better and use it to their advantage.
No.
There may be some of that. The other thing that we finally were told, and we'll have a story on this tomorrow, actually kind of makes sense, that the unemployment, Department of Labor's unemployment payouts are so low they're going to have to raise the percentage they have to charge businesses. But if they go ahead and replenish that fund now before January 31st, then the rate that they take from each business would stay the same. And that's the first thing that even begins to make sense for me of what the rush is and why they wouldn't say that and get that out there, I don't know. But it's weird to open up a special session in the middle of a session, and a lot of it has opened up a lot of theories and a lot of, as I said, conspiracy theories about the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, and one thing that we know is factual that members of the legislature can't campaign and raise money right during session. So there's a motivator there to get things get out there as soon as they can.
I'm sorry, say that again.
The idea that the members of the legislature can't raise money and campaign while they're in session. It's another motivator for them to, you know, maybe not fully try to get things done and get out of there.
Yeah, well, that's true until 120 days out from the election. So mm-hmm. I think at the end of January, February 1st, it's open back up to okay. raise money, even though they're in session. I forgot what the actual date is, but yeah, I've heard the talk too that it has to do with a lot of that. Listen, we both know they want to get this done. They want to be able to tout what they've done and then go home and tell voters, particularly the ones who may be primaried. Hey, look, this is what we did, and this is why you need to keep sending me to Montgomery.
Speaking of Montgomery, let's go from the legislative branch to the executive branch and all those folks that would like to be the next governor of the great state of Alabama. We've got, of course, Tim James. You and I talked about it a little bit last week. We can do that. Lindy Blanchard in name change. Y'all. It was Linda. Now it's Lindy. Dean Odell, you had a story about them at the, where was it, Coffee County? They had a conclave there.
Right. Lindy and Dean Odell and
Lou Burdette.
Tim James. I guess Lou Burdette didn't make it because he's under the weather with some COVID, but he joined in by phone. Interesting. And I think what's really fascinating, and you and I kind of said this before, and everybody, this isn't like groundbreaking news. There's not a lot of difference in what they're saying about each other. It's all kind of the same thing. It's just who do you like better? Although, you know, and it's even funny, even on the gambling issue, which 20 years ago would have been no way would you get out there and say you're for it. Now it's suddenly, well, I'm personally opposed to it, but
right.
Opening up that door for some form of gambling to take place as if everybody just seems to agree the people of Alabama want it. And I don't know if they do or not. I think that's why you have votes on issues like this.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is an executive branch part of it, obviously, because the governor assigning it. But I mean, this is something that is the legislative branch, right? I mean, we've seen this. This is something the Senate and the House. I mean, it's okay, I guess, to ask a governor or gubernatorial candidate's opinion on it, but they're not gonna make it happen or not happen. It's gonna be the legislature.
Yeah, I mean, all the governor can do is either come out and say, yeah, I'm for it, or I'm against it, or I'm not taking a position on it. We'll let the people decide. And I think that, but I do think if it's an issue that's important to people, they want to know. I mean, even at the Senate level, I know Katie Britt, who's running for Senate, was asked a question. She said, well, that's not a federal issue. It's a state issue. I don't want to get involved. And the people at this particular meeting said, but we would like to know your personal view. That helps us, learn about you as a person and maybe your own views. And she stayed away from it, right or wrong. But I do think it kind of reflects the more about the person that you're voting for. And so I think it's a legitimate question to ask, even though you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, the legislature has got to decide, okay, here's the way we want to present it. And then I believe constitutionally it's got to go to a vote to get out there for the people of Alabama ultimately to decide.
Yeah, and we've got the constitutional amendment, and then we have with the supporting legislation. I'll look at this. Tony just texted in here, said, why can't we vote to repeal the prohibition on gambling and on a concept of gambling without a detailed plan naming five people that can run the gambling or whatever? This idea of why lottery is tied to casino gaming tied to sports gaming.
I mean, I think ultimately it will come down to the legislature to say, this is what we're putting out there to vote. Is it just lottery? Is it just casino? Is it both? Is it sports? What's it going to look like? And then again, and you and I have talked about this before, in fact, we talked about it off air, that it sounds like they've already made up their mind who's going to get the casino licenses if it passes. And it's not going to be opened up for for free and fair competition for people to bid on. So it really does almost sound like it's a fait accompli that that so many in the legislature just think it's going to happen. It's now, what's it going to look like, and how do we get it out there?
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'll hear from people, they go, well, the major sticking point right now is deciding, you know, who's going to get what revenue from what, you know, what entity or what asset. Yeah. Yeah, it seems like y'all are putting the cart before the horse on this.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. Let's just see. And again, I know you and I have said this, and I repeat myself, but this isn't a case where the state needs the money. I mean, we've got money, and there's, in spite of the fact that they keep saying, well, this is one-time federal money, even before COVID, our revenue in this state was increasing, you know, at record numbers. And there's, if the economy collapses, yeah, then you got to adjust with it. But the point is, we don't need lottery money or gambling money to shore up education right now, or to do this or to do that. We've got the money. So it really comes down to, do we want to be able to gamble, and what do we want that gambling to look like?
Yeah, and that's one of the questions that gets lost in the debate in Montgomery. Speaking of being flush with money, we talked about the ARPA side of it, but I know a story over at 1819news.com is talking about, I think it was, is it Senator Orr is, I don't know if it's his bill or he's part of it, the reduction, I think it's SB 18 and 19 to reduce the tax implication on Alabamians?
On the gas, on grocery,
yeah.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, he's pushed that. He's got a number of other people that are co-sponsoring. Alabama is one of a few states, it's less than half, that still have tax on grocery. It would not remove local taxes on your groceries, but it would, the first proposal was just to do away with it from the state level. Now they're, because, you know, our state legislature just can't bear the thought of giving away money, I think they're saying we could reduce it from 4% to 2%. To do something just to let people keep more money in their pocket, which I think is a great step in the right direction. And that goes back to what we're saying. Every time we talk about the government, whether it's state or federal, I'm going to give you money. No, what they're saying is I'm going to take less of your money because that money comes from us before they can give it back to us. And I'm for anything that lets all of us, rich, poor, middle class, whoever, keep the money that we have, keep more of it in our pockets, and then just give what we need to give for basic state services.
Yeah, it's truly a regressive tax, and I've argued that you can look at it just agnostically and just say it's good because it's a reduction in taxes. But I'll put some heart in it because that's what I do, and it is a bigger burden on working poor in our state. It is the folks that are trying to, they're getting up, they're busting their hump, they're working, and in our area, it's 10% more for their groceries, 10%.
Yeah, and you know, that and the gas tax, and again, I understand the gas tax for infrastructure, although once again, the federal government's come in and has provided money to upgrade all the infrastructure, so I'm not sure we need that gas tax anymore. But the truth is that you're right. It's the lower, the poor, the hardworking people just trying to make it paycheck to paycheck. That makes a huge difference, the grocery taxes, and to reduce it 1%, 2%, 4%, whatever it is, me, you really want to help people, that's a great way to do it, is just make, with inflation, just make life more affordable. Because even if I go out and get a better job and I get a 4% raise, inflation 6%, almost 7%, that raise doesn't even keep me to the level of living that I'm used to. And that's really discouraging for people.
Well said. If people have not, they don't know about 1819news.com yet, introduce yourself, introduce the website to them. What do y'all do?
Sure, 1819news.com. We are a statewide news service that we were started, opened up in October of this past year. We've got a staff of reporters that cover Montgomery as well as statewide issues. We've got a good lineup of opinion writers that are right of center. I think that's something missing. We've got women, we have minorities writing opinion op-ed pieces for us, and we're expanding into the whole area of podcasts, so you'll be seeing some more news about that and investigative reporting. So the easiest thing to do is go to 1819news.com every day. You can sign up for the newsletter, and that gets the into your inbox in the morning with the day's headlines and key things you need to know. And we just appreciate that people are starting to listen, pay attention, and visit the site more and more. We hope we become a valuable source of news and information for the people of Alabama.
Ray, as always, I appreciate our conversations. Looking forward to next week.
You too, Sean. Have a great week. Stay warm.
I'm going to try. You too. Ray Bellick, 1819news.com. Oh, traffic update here. Thank you, Daniel. A porta potty, Porter John, is that a trade name? Is in the middle of eastbound I-10 right before the DIP overpass, and it's standing upright. Oh, gosh, I need the story. Y'all be careful, but I do need the backstory on that. Porta potty, middle of eastbound I-10 right before the DIP overpass, and it's standing upright. I hope somebody's not in there. I mean, that's be embarrassing.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Daniel gave me an update there from that traffic report that had the porta potty in the middle of I-10 eastbound right before the DIP overpass. It was standing upright. He said it was camouflage. Now, Daniel, I've seen somebody on Facebook selling those as shooting houses, so maybe it was one of those. Maybe they were delivering those, what is the term, repurposed porta potties for that. So, but thank you for the traffic update. If anything changes out there, we'll let you know. Right now, I want y'all to say hello to my buddy, David McCrary, LCM Motor Cars, and let's talk inventory, David.
Sean, we've got one of the best inventories we've had in probably 6-8 months. We've got cars from $5,000 to $50,000, and we've got trucks under $20,000 all the way to $50,000 plus. And they're nice cars. I mean, we've got a Nissan Altima out here for $5,000. It's a nice car, mechanically sound. Everything's been checked, and everything's got a warranty for 3 months, 3,000 miles.
And speaking of that, too, if somebody, y'all inspect those vehicles, but if somebody wants to take that vehicle to their own mechanic, what do you say?
More than welcome. Absolutely. I encourage them to do it. And we're going to give them a Carfax. And, we pull Carfax on everything. And everything I'm talking about is also financeable. So we can finance the $5,000 stuff all the way up to the, $60,000 stuff.
All right. Tell people how to find you.
We're on Highway 90 at Plantation in Theodore. You can call us at 251-375-0068 or just go check out our website, lcmmotorcars.com, and fill out a credit app.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, Sean. Have a good day.
You too. David McCrary checking in from LCM Motor Cars. Let's see, more. Okay, enough with the porta potty updates on the text line. Now, Keith, you got me. Let's see. Paul, what do you think happens with schools tomorrow? Meaning what? You talking about for whether they, with the ice thing? I don't know. And it's easy. It would be easy to get on here and just say there's overreaction, right, for school. But at the same time, if you're in that position, let's say you're public school, right, running public school, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because listen, early on in my career, I used to make fun of the school closure days when there'd be like a chance of drizzle. Oh, we're going to shut school down. But if there's anything beyond that, and we deal with it with tropical weather and all that, you're in a tough position. And in this case, I'm going to defend school administrators and those, because if you have school and then all of a sudden there's ice or there's some kind of event and somebody gets in a wreck or something like that, and you should say it's their own personal responsibility, I get it, but we don't live in that world anymore. Then you're on the hook because, oh, they demanded that the kids go to school, so I had to risk everybody going to school. Right? So then if you cancel it and then the event doesn't happen or it's not at the, expanse that people think it's going to be or whatever, which Dr. Bill says it's a specific thing. It could happen. Didn't say it's guaranteed, but it could happen. You could get the freezing rain and icing on bridges and overpasses, those kind of places. Not like, the stuff that brings tree branches down and all that. Not like that, but like an ice glaze on the road. Especially, stuff that's not on, that's a bridge or an overpass. If you shut school down and that doesn't happen, well, then you, number one, add extra school day on there, and then it's the, you're overreacting. So it's easy. It'd be easy to sit on here and sit on the show and pick at people like that, but I wouldn't want to have to make that call with all those kids, and whatever call you make is going to be wrong, right? All right. So where is the bridge money? Somebody texted. Well, that's a great question. That's the $2.1 billion question, isn't it? And if we have to go through like the frequently asked questions, the FAQs on this, the idea that there's no specific way to earmark money. Well, the way they used to earmark money specifically for a project, so your federal legislator earmarking something for federal dollars to be spent in the home state doesn't work that way anymore. It may go back to that, but now they have to, the federal money has to go to a state agency, in our case, ALDOT, to be put there. And if you're asking the gas tax money, well, the state has in the last deal that came, what was it, a week and a half ago, ALDOT sent a letter back to the MPOs for the Eastern Shore and Mobile agreeing to what they had asked, and $250 million, which a lot of people will say is not enough, but the state has signed on to do $250 million worth of spending for the bridge. So you have that federal infragrant money, which is like, what is it? I forget now. Is it 150, 125 million or 150 million, something like that? What's 25 million among friends? That federal money is allocated, but it has to be, it has to be not used, but has to be set up for the project, I think, within a few months. It has a shelf life. And then you have $250 million from the state. That all sounds good until you look at the $2.1 billion price tag and say, well, we're going to have to make up the rest of it. Will the toll, the $2 and something toll, be enough to do that? But that's, so there's the short, unnamed texture, there's the long and short of bridge money. And really, enough with the, okay, really not enough with the porta potty updates. I'm enjoying those two on the text line. All right, be right back.